Ce soir, sur Campus Grenoble.
90.8.
Nous ferons ce qui est interdit.
Nous irons ensemble à la buvette.
L'apéro.
Phonie.
L'exception radiophonique.
L'apérophonie.
De la culture.
Et de la musique.
Au shaker et à la cuillère.
Campus Grenoble 90.8.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Apérophonie. Welcome to the second episode of our special podcast series about masculinities and their impact on men, women and gender diverse people's lives. My name is Lisa, I'm an Equality and Prevention Mission Assistant at Grenoble Alpes University. My work aims to open up discussion and raise awareness on topics such as sexual consent, gender equality and the right to non-discrimination. Joining me to host this session is Meriem, Health and Prevention Mission Assistant, whom I'll let introduce herself.
Hello. So, yes, I am a Health and Prevention Mission Assistant at UGA, so that's Université Grenoble-Alpes. And I work on relaying information from the health center to students in a digestible way and talking them through procedures and all of that administrative stuff. And making it easier for everyone to have access to health services. So this is the second of a series that we hope to continue. Last episode with our lovely guest, Dr. Nicole Thompson, we took a deep dive into masculinities through the lens of relationship, sex, pleasure, and many, many other things that we invite you to listen to because the episode has been uploaded. So we unpacked the Connell's hierarchy, and we talked about incel culture, porn distortions, and how rigid norms hinder consent and vulnerability in intimate spaces.
And in today's episode, we stay with masculinities, but we shift to spaces where men are told to be strong at all costs, be it the army, sports, and other high-pressure environments. The question is, what happens to men's mental health when the rule is to never show weakness?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And to discuss this, we are delighted to be joined by Dr. James Elder, who's a veteran, an athlete, and a rugby coach. And please correct us if we're wrong during this introduction. So it is safe to say, well, it is not safe to say, but some of these attributes aren't the first things we think of when we think of a therapist, at least from our experiences. And as a therapist that advocates for a healthy masculinity, that is. So while researching Dr. Elder's background and work, we have been confronted by our own judgment and prejudice with gender expression and masculinity. So it's very ironic and it's very good that this has been brought into light. And we've been called out very strongly with this guest. This will help us all explore what our collective imagination is of masculinity and its expression and all that it entails. So, hello, James. Sorry if we took too long to address you.
Hi, everybody. Yes, it's an honour to be on the show with you today. As you said, I'm Dr. James Alder. I'm currently a chartered psychologist and work as a lecturer at Arden University in London. Mm-hmm. I've also participated as a rugby player. So, yes, as an athlete, I'm getting on in age now. So I'm predominantly a match official and coach.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And so we said that you were a veteran and you were in the army. And this is a very interesting perspective when it comes to masculinity. So can you at least give us a sense of how all of this led to where you are today as a doctor, as a therapist?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Thank you for the question. My name, I come from the north of England, Wigan in Lancashire. I was brought up in a working class background, a traditional Irish Catholic family, and always that was always framed as, you know, do the right thing, work hard, provide for the family as a role that a man should have growing up. I left home at 16 as a young man, joined the military, because I felt that I needed something different in my life. I wanted to obviously leave home, stand on my own two feet, but the role and the actual environment the military provided gave me good standing. You know, it was similar to what my family background was, you know, get your head down, work hard, you know, the discipline side of life. It had a sense of identity. I was always part of a brotherhood. The camaraderie between soldiers was really a massive part of what made the military stand out above other careers. I didn't have many qualifications growing up. I left school with just a basic amount, but it gave me something that probably education couldn't give me, and that was life experience. And through my time in the military, I went on many military tours, Northern Ireland, Bosnia, Iraq. I did obviously working tours in Saudi Arabia, Canada, Italy. And all those give me lots of different perspective. But what was very unique, but also continuous in that was the togetherness, the part of being a part of a family. But the masculine side was always about you being able to provide, but also protect your fellow man. And I think that's a role that every soldier has, even up to this day. However, as you can appreciate, going on tour, seeing some life, being part of life-threatening environments, one very close to myself during my tour in Iraq, left lots of scars. I have trauma of losing friends on tour, being part of it, obviously life-changing incidents within myself, left me then being diagnosed with PTSD in 2013. I ignored the symptoms initially because I didn't believe PTSD was real, but I lost a couple of friends who took their own life suffering with PTSD. And I think witnessing that from a distance, knowing what I was going through, I used everything the military taught me to stand alone and, you know, get my head above the parapet and just don't be weak, because that's the image that we're expected to portray. But standing there on parade and looking strong is one thing, but the internal torture really of the memories, the pain, the sense of the loneliness, even though you might be in a crowded room, it got to a point where it became too much, and you use every avenue really to try and hide those weaknesses away. I dove into work, I trained heavy in fitness, but in reality, I did what most people did when that didn't work, and is I utilized alcohol as a mechanism to help me sleep. Alongside those times, another constant was rugby. Coming from Wigan, rugby was part and parcel of your life. If you came from Wigan, you didn't play rugby, you'd be one out of every 100 people, because it's like a religion where I'm from. So rugby also was an environment where I could be with like-minded people. It became a lifeline, because obviously with people that you were familiar with, you could share moments that maybe you wouldn't do with your own family, I guess. Again, it gave me structure, sense of belonging, an outlet to, I guess, to release some of my despair and stress that I was living with. However, over time, again, you go through challenges when you lose comrades on tour, or you see people injured on a rugby game, then in wounds come back. And, you know, the mind, just like the body, can only take so much toil. And that's where then your inner weaknesses start to surface to the front. I noticed during my long suffering, that the prescribed medications weren't working for me. I needed something different. And that's what then, as I entered my earlier years as an academic, I needed to find out if something could help me. And that's where my PhD journey came about, were exploring the use of physical exercise as a treatment, their therapeutic and holistic method that could work alongside tried and tested remedies, but in some times could be stood alone if it was relevant for the individual. And this is where I sat down, used trauma as a vehicle to examine and then work with people who were suffering with PTSD through the use of movement. And that's where it brings me up to today, and those experiences and actually examining what could and what couldn't work brought me into psychology. And obviously, the topic of psychology can be quite dry, but actually when you use the theory alongside real life experiences, anything can be unlocked. And I'm very proud to be qualified as a chartered psychologist, which then offers me the opportunity to provide insight to many areas, one being masculinities.
Well, thank you, James, for this overview. This is great. Just for a personal note, that is, I think that is absolutely amazing that you are speaking up and sharing your story, and also trying to help other men or women. I don't know if you are helping both of them, but in any case, this is great because I think that in the media and just in general, this is not talked about enough. Sometimes we are going to mention that former soldiers or former people that took part in any kind of fight or combat are kind of let down by the institutions once they are back from the field. But it never goes. How do you say that? Like, it never goes beyond that. It's just a statement, and we have to deal with it. That's it. So it's great that you mentioned all of the idealized stereotypes, ideas around men in the military, because we were wondering when you hear the term militarized masculinity, what does it bring up to you personally as a veteran and also as a former rugby player and coach? Because it's, in our opinion, it's kind of linked in some aspects. So if you could share what it brings up for you.
Yeah, sure. I mean, as I mentioned, I brought up in a really traditional Irish Catholic background. My dad was always the benchmark of where we would envisage us to be. You know, I have a brother who looked up to my dad in exactly the same way. Not really looking at it as masculinity, but looking at it as being he's our role model. We always want to be like our dad. But military masculinity was always seen to be a little bit different. It envisioned a version of manhood, that standalone, strong, central figure, you know, that everybody looks to for protection, you know, value driven, built on endurance, however, with a level of suppression and usefulness, you know, could always be reliant on because that's the person everyone looked towards. Value is measured not just in how much you can tolerate, but really how much little you needed, you know, self-reliant, strong in personality and character. However, equal to that, and especially in the military, you're mostly silent. You're not allowed to show any sense of who you really are or what you're suffering with, because that needs to become a form of discipline, so to speak. Silence is golden. Get your head down, push through the barriers, because people are reliant on you, so you have to show that vision of strength and independence. So you really neglect yourself in a way to show loyalty to the bigger picture, because you know people are looking at you. So you know there are things I deeply regret with that, because yes, I love the solidarity and the togetherness, but I lost a lot of myself along the way, you know. I think today we look at the word courage. Now, I've seen courage in real life on the battlefield, but the cost is enormous because you lose self-identity, the identity that they once had. I can't even imagine who James Alder was prior to joining the army anymore. Men are also, who do you think they are? They're not the people that you once knew. And I can definitely echo that. So there's one thing about being strong, but in the masculinity side of things, you're there for everyone else. Despite yourself. So everyone comes first. And I think in the military, that's really, it's really a strong message that both men and women, because it's very equal in the military, regardless of your gender, you're expected to show the same stand fast image of strength and courage.
So, what I gather from what you said is that people tend to be or choose stoicism in a way to detach from like their identities and to be like a pillar for everyone around them. Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yes, very much so.
And so, like, we notice that a lot of young men nowadays idealize this image of the stoic a hero who only looks for like the common good and doesn't express any sort of emotions. And as in a way, it can be healthy to explore different sides to that, but also there's this very mystified image of a soldier that people want to follow, and they don't realize like the intricacies and complexity of what happens. Like you said, you lost yourself and you've been thrown into the military since 16, and like that's when you form an identity, I guess, you know? So, what can you tell these young lads who are looking to the army as a sort of haven to their masculinities?
I think society at large is very different from when I joined generationally. When I joined up in 1989, it was seen as an honor, an environment that you should be proud to be in. I think many people see the military in a different light these days. And I think some of that is due to the governments of the time muddying the water a little bit in the sense of the role and responsibility of the military. The countless operational tours, be it Iraq, Afghanistan, because of the use of now of social media, you can't, nothing's hidden. Everything's there on real time. So when you see things that go on, the image that once was stood on a pedestal is maybe not as large. There is some people that still see the military as a standalone environment or something they fall back on because other career opportunities may not have come to light. So the military or soldiering, if you want, for a better word, is a dominant blueprint. I agree. It's strong, it's fearless. You learn discipline, obedience, self-control, willing to go above and beyond, and die without hesitation in some cases. However, for someone who's gone through that in real time, it's not how it all seems. There's a lot of bad times during that, dark times. There's a lot of silence. There's a lot of, let's just say you're not always treated as if you're a movie star, so to speak. You have to, take the rough with the smooth. So when people see these advertisements on TV or this, show soldiering as being the big thing, they just got to remember, like all jobs, there's hard times and there's good times. It's not like the movie or a game or a sport where people, are showcasing their abilities and talents. They've got to try and encapsulate that with real time. So if you do want to become a soldier and that's the life that you want, great, every credit to you. But not all soldiers go to war. The times of going on tour now is very minimal just due to the way we are at the moment. But if that's what you want, be true to yourself. try and hold on to that sense of worth and sense of value that you see within yourself. Because what the military does, it through basic training, it breaks you down to the basic commodities and needs to rebuild you to ensure that you can suffer the hardest toils and still do your job. So I ask you this question. If you do want to join the military and you can handle the times that's not going to be always on tour doing the Hollywood movements or, you know, the social media clips, ask yourself this. Are you tough enough? Are you brave enough? Are you worthy enough? And if you're yes to all those questions, then it's the right environment to be in.
And once you're out of the war context and the tours and maybe even out of the army, because you are, there's a term, you know, when you come back home for a certain period of time, you're not discharged, but I don't have the exact term, or when you're out of your military career, who do you see, young men, young women as well, but for the topic, for the sake of the topic and the time, let's say young men or men that are not so young anymore, try to express their gender, express their masculinity out of this violent and high pressure environment?
Yeah, it's very challenging because, you know, soldiers are expected to switch off, but they're only human beings at the end of the day. So if you come back off tour, you're down in post-operational drawdown. You might have some time off or you're doing some training. But if you actually do leave the military, and I remember this, my initial years coming out, it's very hard to turn that soldier switch off. The way you present yourself, your expectations, you know, men are men. And you're expected to provide and do what's expected of you. But I think society has moved on, where the military, it's like you're in a bubble. So it's very difficult for soldiers or people who leave the military to stop being that way for a period of time because it's all they know for the longest time. And they don't always get that transitional support when they leave. So I can understand why many, many soldiers, when they leave, struggle with that identity. I did myself, you know, soldier first, James second. And it took almost 10 years for me to actually start seeing James again.
And who do you think sometimes this can lead to outburst of violence and violence against yourself, but also against others?
Yeah, I think it's like you have a bottle of fizzy pop and you keep shaking it, putting it down, shaking it, putting it down, and then eventually you take the lid off. There's going to be a reaction. Now, I don't say that to minimize the outburst by the individuals who may do this. But like myself through PTSD, sometimes them emotional outbursts come through frustration, lack of control, unable to stop because you've got to a point where your breaking point has just disappeared. And the lack of support for military people when they leave doesn't help that. So I don't minimize that. I just think it's there needs to be a level of empathy for these individuals who struggle with that control, but equally a level of accountability, accept what they've done wrong, but then support them through that rehabilitation or transition. So it lessens, because that individual could be suffering with some form of mental health issue, which has been, you know, put on the back burner because they've had to put other people before themselves.
Absolutely. thank you for... your input on this topic. We'd like to just take a little break to listen to a tune from Lucky Love called Masculinity. So it's right in the theme. So I hope you enjoy also the musical break. And we'll jump right in after this song.
What the fuck is wrong with my party? Am I not enough? Who gives you the right to run the walls? Who gives you the right to run the walls? What's wrong with you? Tell me, baby, baby, do I walk like a boy? Do I speak like a boy? Do I stand like a boy? Sorry, babe, you keep asking, do I kiss like a boy? Should I spit like a boy? May I fuck all the boys? Tell me, baby, baby, do I walk like a boy? Do I speak like a boy? Do I stand like a boy? Sorry, babe, you keep asking, do I kiss like a boy? Should I spit like a boy? May I fuck all the boys? Tell me, baby, baby, my flesh to gel my soul. I just feel like I can fall. My master's not sharp enough, and my hair is way too long. And what about my voice? What about my voice? Do you think I sound like the other? Do I walk like a boy? Do I speak like a boy? Do I stand like a boy? Sorry, babe, you keep asking, do I kiss like a boy? Should I spit like a boy? May I fuck all the boys? Tell me, baby, baby, do I walk like a boy? Do I speak like a boy? Do I stand like a boy? Sorry, babe, you keep asking, do I kiss like a boy? Should I spit like a boy? May I fuck all the boys? Tell me, baby, what about my masculinity? What the fuck is wrong with my body? Am I not enough? Or even too much? It will be short-sighted to try. Is it coming through your mind that I don't?
Welcome back to Aperophonie. Welcome back, James, Dr. James. So we're gonna jump right back in and continue with talking about coping mechanisms. So, Dr., can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, perfect. So you mentioned from your personal experience that you resorted to alcoholism and to deal with your emotions to at least go to sleep. And it's fairly interesting to see how people in these high pressure environments cope with the pressure during and post. So it can be alcohol, drugs, or just plain old silence. So what are some of these mechanisms that you witnessed, not just from your experience, and how do people go about this? How do they survive the coping mechanism itself?
I mean, that's a great question. In my individual experience, I did what a lot of people in the military, and that dived into work, always first one in, last one out, tried to use that as a distraction. And then when I was a physical training instructor in the army, so I always was involved in personal training, fitness training, running, so to speak. So whenever there's a moment, I'm training, got to a point where, you know, the work-life balance became too much. But when those two avenues don't work, you're left with seek help, or in the military, because you can't be seen to be being weak, I tend to find somewhere else. So most people will find advice that helps them. I, you know, the military has a big drinking culture, sport, work, my upbringing, drink was always associated with, I guess, a social element. But I use drink as a way of, I guess, drowning out the noise, helping me sleep. But that, in a way, didn't, because it became too much of a crutch, to the point that I overdrank and then became, I guess, reliant on it. But by doing that, I then became quite angry, and people around work noticed those outbursts. My own family became distant from me. And it was really my family who forced me to seek support, because at that time I wasn't. The military used, like, the use of dark humour, make fun of each other, so then it obviously detracts. It's also a good coping strategy on tour, because obviously if you're missing home, using dark humour was a good way of distracting that. But in most cases, soldiers or people I've interacted with just really bury themselves in some kind of task or work project, so then they don't have to deal with themselves. Now, in the short term, and as I found out, they do work. You know, they can help you to overcome that moment where, by being focused on something, it then removes that immediate threat of dealing with trauma, a mental health issue, or something that's going on in your life that you just don't want to face. Because obviously, you know, in the military or any professional work, even academia, you know, you've got professional reputations to uphold, and you don't want to be seen as being unable to fulfill your role. And also, you want to be seen as having a good impression on your peers and your chain of command. So then you potentially could be in line for the next promotion or the next opening that can project your career. But long term, and I noticed this myself and with people I've interacted with, especially on my PhD, is it doesn't work long term. You know, long term, people lose sleep, breakdown of relationships, the rage from emotional inability to control. So that could be domestic violence, or getting self into trouble, or self-harm. We sent, you know, in a sense, has then led them to further health and duty of care issues going down the line, with many people getting put under mental health warnings or protections. I think self-harm has been on the increase, especially around young men, because obviously they've not had the ability to have those life lessons of how to control emotions or seek help. I think this generation's different. I think people of this day and age are very much open to self-talk or seek help or speak with peers. My generation, not so much. So there's some work to be done, you know. But one thing that I'd have to say to anyone who's listening is, you know, if you've been experienced any form of trauma, it doesn't disappear. You might not think about it in that moment or in that day, but it's still there. And the only way you can do it is to get through that moment, or to deal with it and get help, is to seek help, talk, ask for help. But if you know someone like that, encourage them to get help, because it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. We want everyone to be healthy and safe.
And this trauma, of course, could be something that is not related to any experience in the military, because... Well, I would like your opinion on that, because when you were explaining all this, for me, it goes way beyond former soldiers. It's something that is maybe amplified of course, not even maybe, but it is of course amplified by the environment provided by the military, but also men that I see around me, in my family, in my circles, men that you can see in the media, online, I can see a parallel between what you said and what I witness. And they are not necessarily from a military background. So I would like your opinion on extending this analysis to other men, other people outside of the army. And I guess it could be a second question as well. You said somewhere that men tended to favor a fix more than speaking up and be heard, either by a professional or by someone from their surroundings and their circles. And what do you think is the impact of this in shaping the way they seek help or don't seek help?
No, of course. I was speaking to one of my students a couple of weeks ago, and they was talking about their son who still looks at, you know, the father figure as being the role model, and, you know, the lessons being taught about, you know, deal with the problem, you know, fix a problem, move on, because that's how the role models are dealing with that issue at the time. I think not all people are the same. Some people are can be vulnerable and can be open to that expression of feelings, where some men are very much the opposite, where they're very task-orientated. They can't departmentalize. They have to fix what's going on. So they'll identify a problem. They see it as the task that they need to overcome, and they'll find a remedy to try and fix it. Now, it's great to be that driven. But as that drive is going on, what about this issue that's still playing out? What about the person of yourself? You might find a remedy of the moment, but about the long-term strategy to dealing with yourself? Also, a lot of men feel like if they listen or they share vulnerability, they come across as being weak, and they don't want that. They want, you know, the opposite sex to see them as being strong, as the provider. And some men wanting even engage in that kind of, there's nothing wrong with me, just leave me alone, let me get on. Because they see themselves as being a strong individual that has to be display that masculinity stance. So they delay any kind of way of seeking help, hoping symptoms will go away. I had this conversation with an ex-colleague in the military. When I was diagnosed with PTSD, they said, well, how come you've got it? I haven't. We've both been on the same tour. And the thing I said to him was, I hope when you realize you need help, you get it. At the moment, you're stronger than me. And I think that's the same outside of the military. You might have failed at an exam paper. You might have a relationship breakup. And at that time, you might want to be strong and you might want to get through it and not feel like that's one, that the failed exam or the girlfriend leaving you or whatever relationship you're in, they're the winners. You want to see you as being strong and the winner. But inevitably, if you don't accept what has gone on and find a way of resolving that, you're going to suffer. So you will come to a point where you will need to seek support. It might be academic support. It might be mental health support. It might be relationship support. But whatever you need to seek those mechanisms to help you find a solution that will help you, not just in the now, but going forward in future so you don't repeat the same situations. So what I would say is be open to discussion. You know, yes, it's great to be purpose and task orientated or even being driven, but there's going to be hurdles along the way, and it's how you manage them hurdles, learn through that experience, and knowing part of that experience, it's also talking and listening to somebody when they offer advice. And if you do that, you have a better chance then, I think, of still keeping a part of you, not losing what you feel is your identity, yourself, a masculine ego, but also feeling that you are approachable and adaptable, and you can overcome challenges and you're not seen as weak.
Yeah, because we should shift perspective on what we consider being a weakness or being a strength, because isn't recognizing that you need help, that you cannot stand on your feet alone right now, really, like, isn't it really strong? Isn't it very brave to be able to admit it and be vulnerable?
It is. It is to, like, you are very in tune with your needs, and you recognize when you need help. And so this discussion about trying to seem strong and to be the winner kind of brings to the surface a very frequent but not often talked about atrocity, that is violence against men, and specifically sexual violence against men. We tend to see, like, from my experience, I talk, like, with my men friends and guy friends, and they often have some sort of experience being sexually assaulted, and they talk about it in the most just normal way, and they're like, yeah, it's whatever, it happened, whatever. And it's like, no, it's not whatever. And so this was mind-boggling to me, and I hope you can shed some light on this, but I don't understand why there's this much silence on a topic that's frequent, on something that happens super often through our daily lives, through our history. We see every day that there's, like, some, like, children getting assaulted, and yeah, so can you help us understand this, please? Because,
yeah, like, why do you think male survivors of violence struggle to come forward so much?
Yeah.
I think sexual violence on any gender is atrocious, and it should be accepted at any level, and victims on both sides should be allowed to quite honestly and mostly open up on that experience. And I haven't been in that situation, so I can't really comment on an individual sense. But I think, you know, talking it from a male perspective, as I was said earlier in this conversation, young boys growing up are expected to have a role. You know, if they look, you know, they have a family where the father's at home, they look at the father as being the core role model in life, or the part of a team, sporting team, it's a coach. It might be a teacher at school, someone who's seen on put on a pedestal. So if they're actually part of a situation where they are assaulted in some form or abused in a sexual manner, they'll see that they've had their masculinity stripped away. You know, it actually strips that sense of strength, that control, that dominance, that I can't be hurt, you know, by being open about that and actually accepting what happened, not accepting by allowing it, but not being open to share that experience, make a complaint or whatever the situation may be for the individual. They feel that they may come across as weak or not believed, because how dare a man be sexually assaulted? That's just not what happens, you know. And if you do open up, will I be believed? Or just be ridiculed because, just a weak man, you know, you got turned away by somebody, or, you know, whatever reason. And that's why a lot of men or young boys probably feel uncomfortable or not confident to come forward. They fear questions that might attack their own individual sexuality. If they're young men or they're adults, they might feel that their manhood's being questioned, or what they're saying is truthful. And they can't be relied upon, you know. Equal to that, I think men and women, we put people in silos, and men feel sometimes by being honest about what happened to them, it might not just impact them, but men in general. So they feel like they're letting the side down, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, if I open up about this, I'm letting my team down, the men's team. and what image does that portray me in that peer group?
Yeah, thank you for these insights. This is very interesting to talk about, and I think it's a nice bridge for our next topic.
Yeah, just to give you a foreshadowing of what we're gonna do. We talked about like men in other men and betraying the community of men. So after the break, we're gonna talk about communities and brotherhood.
And then let's hear a bit of music.
On the street, I'm a king-size killer. I can make your kingdom come. On my feet, I'm an earthquake shaking. So open up my little one. Hey, what are you looking at? Who the hell do you think I am? And what are you looking at? Like you never seen a broken man.
Welcome back to Apérophonie with Radio Campus. This is Mariam and Lisa. And we're jumping right back in with brotherhoods. So as you said, men and like the army as well for you was a community. It was a family. And that was very important to have a sense of belonging. And in a sense, maybe the military gave that belonging, but also it took away some of your identity. And so how would you maybe describe a more efficient or like more constructive community for men where they can come forward and they can still be themselves?
I think it's environment. I think in the military, you even now I could be anywhere in the UK. If I bump into someone, you can tell by image, you can tell by the persona that they was in the military. You've got that life sharing experience, so you feel comfortable talking in general terms. And if you mention, say, for instance, going to Iraq or whatever it may be, you already know what where the mindset is. So I think having that familiarity is very important. So the best form of brotherhood really is have a connection. So in sporting teams, rugby being the sport, what tends to happen in sport teams is they're predominantly from that area. So they have that regionality, the team ethos. So having that familiarity, it helps. So they have that connection. By having those, you allow, you can then have humorous interactions. I mentioned about the military having dark humor, that gets you through some difficult times. But having the ability to feel that you can make fun of each other actually matters, because it then takes away any kind of stigma or any sense of lack of support. Because obviously, if you can trust someone to have fun with, you've got that level of care. And you see this a lot in a lot of sport teams. When something happens in one of the players' or coaches' lives, the coming together from everyone to support that individual through that is huge. And that's why I think in sport teams, military, in society, we do have that sense of brotherhood. We can rely on our teammates to help through them difficult times. And it gets through that, really. I mean, the men who, are very good at asking people how they are, some people are not very good at it, but by sharing those moments together, inevitably you will have a discussion. And I think this allows the wider group then to feel supported. Generationally too, you have those interactions that might be different. I'm 52. I might interact with a member of my group. Like this weekend, I was with a match official who's a lot younger than me. But you still got to have those discussions, and by being open, you see then the togetherness. You can share those vulnerabilities. You learn through those, maybe an error I made or error we made as a group, and you can discuss it openly. Because you see it more of as a togetherness, a brotherhood, rather than it being just the performance itself. And I think this, and it's in a way, widens that sense of masculinity, because it branches out rather than keeping it very narrow in a tunnel, so to speak.
So, do you think that, well, let's call it trauma bonding, in military units or shared experiences in a sports team, or it could be, I don't know, in a gaming group or in a study group, can this sometimes open door to more empathy and specifically less prejudice, for example, towards queer men or other groups that can be stigmatized by society?
Yeah, I think it's difficult to have empathy for all aspects, I would say, but the military, sporting environments, or in the classroom, one of the things I display in each lesson I teach, I try and bring back my life experience through my journey in academia. I failed two papers, both as one as an undergrad and one in postgrad, and by sharing that story, it lessens the pressure of doing a paper. Now, through my experience, I still passed my degree and I got a distinction in the postgraduate master's in psychology, even though I failed the paper. So you can learn from them experiences. If you share that with someone who has come out openly as being gay in an environment that is potentially hostile, ignorant, narrow-minded, or just inexperienced, then it's very difficult to share empathy. So you need to have that exposure. I coached a rugby team where one of the players was gay, and initially it was very difficult for the individual because he was the only one who's openly gay in the team. But by the players welcoming him in first of all, as a player, that has to be said, and then that bond grows over time. His sexuality never ever became an issue, but it shouldn't have been an issue in the first place. But those players needed to be exposed to that environment and that experience for them to grow as men and as human beings. So yes, empathy is massively important. I share empathy every day, be it on the, coming back early on, as I talked about, meeting fellow veterans. I meet veterans every day. I talk to them every day. Our life experience is slightly different depending on what generation. But the empathy of serving bonds us. On the sporting field, I worked with five different people this weekend at a national league game. Never worked with them before, but we bonded over our performance as match officials. Academics the same. Doing this talk with you lovely people today, we're sharing these experiences, which is only going to grow, not us just as human beings, but our levels of empathy for each other and for the wider population really going through any kind of trauma or mental health issue that they might be living in.
Yeah. So thank you for this answer. I would have a last question maybe to conclude this session, would be that if you could speak directly to a 20-ish year old man listening to us today, maybe in the army or sports team or whatever, really just behind his computer studying, what would you want him to know about being a man and taking care of himself?
Thank you for the question. I guess I'd sit down, have a coffee, beer, depending where we're at, and just say, listen, you don't have to earn your worth by being indestructible. You can just be yourself. You don't have to prove yourself through silence or pain. You know, whoever told a man needs to carry everybody else's burden alone needs to just rip that script up, just live life. Are you meant to live it? Be yourself. Stay true to yourself and let that carry you through. You know, strength isn't only endurance, it's also your honesty. You know, the term these days is your truth. You know, nothing wrong having a soft side to yourself. The risk and reward. Reach high, celebrate the rewards. Don't suffer in silence with a failure. Use that failure to help you become a better person. Use it as fuel to move forward. But more importantly, during any time, strengths or weaknesses, always ask for help. Talk to somebody. Listen to people. Because suffering inside is too much. You know, if something is struggling, if you are struggling with any kind of self, you know, it doesn't make you weak. It just makes you a human being. Reach out for help. You're allowed to be scared, to change your mind. Just take a moment. Take a breath. Life is going to be tough, but more importantly, the tough times and the celebrated times, you're not alone. Share them with people. Reward yourself. You know, you're going to be through times where it's tough. You're going to be silent in them moments. But when you do feel alone, reach and seek help. Find people who see the whole of you, not just the performing parts. Take care of yourself. It isn't selfish, it's preparation. Like going to the gym, you pre-train, you warm up, do the event. Be yourself, love others, and also protect others if that's what you wish. But don't abandon the true you in the process. The man that you are and the man that you're becoming will require courage, compassion, and truth. Not just for others, but more importantly, for yourself. Enjoy life.
Absolutely. Enjoy life. And this just joins Dr. Nicole's advice to have community, to have people that you love, to spread the love and the empathy. It's just, yeah, just be chill. It's nice. So, of course, thank you, James, for your input and advice. And we just want to say that across these two episodes, we've moved from a lot of different spaces, the bedroom, to the battlefield, to the locker room. But we keep coming back to the same thing. Men are allowed to feel, to care, and to ask for help. We invite everyone to reflect on their own expectations of men. Notice when you expect men to man up at work, home, or play. What if we made spaces for their full humanity instead? Great idea.
And huge thanks to you, Dr. James Elder. It was a great conversation. And to our listeners, find Apérophonie on Radio Campus Grenoble. Next up, more on masculinities and beyond. So stay curious.
Yes, thank you.
Et c'était quoi? L'apérophonie! Ouais, mais c'était quoi? L'apérophonie! C'est quoi? L'apérophonie!
Quoi?
Sur Campus Grenoble! Sur quoi? Sur le 90.8.
Ah, sur Campus Grenoble 90.8.
Oui.